Democrats are running out of time to cut a deal amongst themselves on President Biden's domestic agenda. Progressive Democrats say they won't support an infrastructure bill until they have a deal on a larger social safety net budget package. Moderates, well, they're demanding infrastructure first. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, helped negotiate the infrastructure bill with Republicans, and he called on his fellow Democrats to move it now.
I don't know how you would go home and tell your constituents, because of some kind of inside D.C. politics, you voted down one of the president's top priorities.
It's all happening as critical deadlines are coming to raise the debt ceiling and pay America's bondholders and to fund the government.
Let's bring in our political roundtable guest. We've got Rick Klein today, political director at ABC News. Hey, Rick.
Great to be with you.
And Maya King at Politico. Maya, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. And Maya, start with you. The White House and top Democrats said yesterday that they'd reached a deal on a spending bill for the big human infrastructure legislation. Here's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi speaking to reporters yesterday.
We are in a situation of lamb eat lamb. There's so many good provisions. What is affordable and what is effective and what gets the best results as soon as possible?
So there's still a lot of confusion, though, among Democrats about what they've actually agreed on. What do we know? Where do we stand?
Well, we know a little bit of everything and nothing at all at this point. The framework that you heard Speaker Pelosi reference was one of the really important parts of this, and referencing exactly how they're going to pay for all of this, and saying that there are a lot of different options for that infrastructure bill. But a handful of Democrats, as you've mentioned and as my colleagues have reported, say that that's not quite the case and that they're really not sure what's in this bill as it stands and actually how they're going to pay for it. And we're confused a little bit after that press conference yesterday. And so we know more about like what exactly is going into this bill and why Democrats are having dueling factions kind of going back and forth about the order of how these bills will pass and exactly what will go in them. But there still is a lot of confusion around the timing of all of this and just how what will take place to be able to finance it.
And Rick, what's on the line here? Because if moderates and progressives in the party can't figure out this deal, their entire agenda could fall apart and they'd end up with nothing, not even the smaller infrastructure bill that's already passed in the Senate.
Oh, the stakes couldn't be higher. I mean, this is about the core competency that Democrats ran on in governance. This is about Joe Biden's argument that he could bring effective governments. This is a Democrat saying we can do things. We can do things in a sane and rational way. When you have deadlines like the government funding running out next week and the debt ceiling confronted next month, this is really the balance of the Biden domestic agenda. It puts it all on the line at a time of particular political weakness for President Biden and for a party. It's really hard to explain why you've got some people in the party who say this is too big to fail, and you've got others who say this is too small to even pass. That's a very hard argument to square with voters.
Okay, and Rick, staying with you, there's another pressing issue in Congress to raise the debt ceiling. The U.S. could default on its debt for the very first time if it's not done, and that could jack up interest rates and, you know, bring this economy to a halt. Republicans are not on board this train, at least not for now. What's this about? Is this about political fingerprints? Who gets blamed for, you know, overspending the public money, as it were?
That's what it is, 100%. There's almost no one in Congress who doesn't believe that the government doesn't have a responsibility to raise the debt ceiling, to not default on its debts. The question is who has to take the tough vote. And Republicans have been pretty clear. Look, you guys want to spend the money, they say to the Democrats. You better write the checks. You better sign those checks and tell voters why you're doing it. It's a disingenuous argument at best. These Republicans raised the debt ceiling multiple times under Trump. A lot of this new debt is needed because of that spending. But they're saying to Democrats, you control Congress. You got to take those votes.
Yeah, and then you take the political heat. Maya, if push comes to shove, Republicans stay recalcitrant. Do the Democrats have a plan B to move it forward?
Well, as we know, not quite, other than, of course, putting this back from a messaging standpoint on Republicans. And I think that's a big question here, is exactly how Democrats are going to try to move forward with this. If they don't quite have the votes, or if Republicans, like you said, remain being accountable to this, it could really make things very difficult for Democrats, especially heading into 2022 and starting to message around putting them back in office and maintaining their margins in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, Maya, to the next issue. Over to you, Peter. Sorry.
Maya, before we actually move on to that, I just want to follow up with something real quick. You don't really think that that members of either party are going to let the United States default on its debt, do you?
Well, I certainly hope not. And I think that, you know, we've seen in the past that Democrats and Republicans have come together at the 23rd hour to actually make something happen. Of course, not going to bet either way, but I would be very surprised if this time next week we were talking about a government that had actually indeed defaulted, just because the stakes, as Rick points out, are extremely high on actually coming through with this.
Stakes are very high. That's right. Especially when this economy is so unsettled right now. President Biden, let's talk about something else. President Biden really getting a lot of heat for his handling of the situation at the southern border. Some people are comparing the mass deportations of Haitian immigrants to former President Trump's policies toward immigrants. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki defended the way the administration has handled the Haitian migrant crisis yesterday. Let's listen.
We could not see it as any more different from the policy of the prior administration, which the president feels, we all feel, was inhumane, immoral, ineffective, not operationally, wasn't operationally working. And because of the dysfunction of it, we have led to a very broken system that we're dealing with today.
So Rick Klein, Jen Psaki there is not only blaming the foreign president, the former president, also blaming the system. But by not taking more responsibility for what's happening at the border, how much trust is the president losing with allies within his own party?
Well, the fact is that he's continuing some policies to justify the quick deportation of Haitians. It was a policy that was started under President Trump. There's no question the White House has been caught, I think, flat-footed on this, not for the first time on the border. You saw President Trump just today condemning the actions of individual Border Patrol agents and saying they will be made to pay, a really harsh condemnation of people that work for his own administration in terms of how they've treated migrants. And this is an ongoing crisis. There's still thousands and thousands of people who are camped out under bridges there at the border. And look, you know, you can't say that they didn't know there was something coming. This was a long time building. They have not, though, formulated an effective response or an effective response that differentiates from Trump. And they've got a lot of heat inside their own party, their own special envoy to Haiti, even resigning in protest. People are not happy about this, in part because they expected different from Biden.
So Maya, on this issue, the president is taking heat from his own party and the Republicans. What option does President Biden have here?
Well, I think that's really the big question, is exactly how you move forward as an administration, whether you actually do disband Title 42 that allows the expulsion or immediate expulsion of people who have been in the country or at the border without any proper moving over of this process. But I think really, I think the bigger issue is that this is an outgrowth of an issue that's been taking place at the border now for months. And the message coming from this administration has remained the same. Don't come. But that's not quite effective in the face of the myriad crises taking place, not just in the Caribbean, but in Central and South America. I mean, there's a reason why you see this large influx of people coming to the border. It's because they feel that they don't have any other options. But the White House is struggling to figure out, I think, what their options are in actually dealing with this, not just from a policy standpoint, but in terms of optics. They're losing support from even allies within this administration who feel that this is not only ineffective, but inhumane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And very quickly, one more issue. I'm going to stay with you, Maya. The January 6th subpoenas, another important story. The Congressional Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol subpoenaed four former Trump aides, Meadows, Bannon, Scavino, Patel. What's the committee looking for here, Maya?
Well, I think the big thing that they're looking for are details of the day, exactly what was happening. Of course, we all saw the insurrection and we saw those awful scenes of what was taking place at the Capitol. But I think what this committee is looking for is really where President Trump was on January 6th as insurrectionists stormed the Capitol, what he was doing and what he was saying. They have his allies now who will compel to actually testify to some of these details. But I think the case that they're trying to make here is the role that the president and many of those in his inner circle, or the former president, I should say, played in not only stoking tensions ahead of January 6th, but also creating the circumstances that made this kind of the perfect storm to actually take place.
Rick, what do you think? What does the decision to subpoena these four Trump aides say about the direction that this investigation is taking?
It says that they're going directly inside the Trump inner circle. These are his people as close to the president physically as well as spiritually. On January 6th, they know his whereabouts and they would have been in touch electronically with potentially with supporters. This could open the door to all sorts of different directions if they get cooperation. And we'll have to see. But keep in mind, it's the Biden Justice Department that might be making decisions about executive privilege and the like, not the Trump Justice Department. A much different set of facts and circumstances for this committee.
Interesting. We're going to keep a close eye on it. Rick Klein, political director at ABC News, and Maya King, politics reporter at Politico. Thank you very much to both of you. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you.